Welcome to WKXL in the morning on 1450 AM and 103.9 FM Concord, 101.9 FM Manchester, and nhtalkradio.com. I'm your host, AJ Kierstead. Let's get the latest in New Hampshire government news with our friends at the New Hampshire Bulletin. Get their articles at newhampshirebulletin.com. They join WKXL in the morning every Friday. This week I'm joined by senior reporter Anne Marie Timmons. Welcome back.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, before we get into the disaster that is our state government, let's do the little bit of good news that they had, which is it looks like they're starting to roll out some new websites, which should be helpful to the public. It looks like the first one was the General Court.
Yes. On Twitter, I gave the creators of this an A++, and then an hour later, it crashed. But I can say that it was back up a few hours later, and it's great. It's still at General Court, the General Court website we've always had. And initially, you may find yourself on the old site, but it'll quickly switch over. And it's so clean. I feel like it's been written for the public. For example, you are interested in a bill on such and such. You're going to want to know who the sponsor is so you can contact them. This no longer takes about 10 clicks. It takes two or three. And then there's even a button to email the whole committee. And it's just really intuitive. It's very, very user-friendly. And I think it is really great for the public.
Yeah, that's always been the thing with the New Hampshire state sites, is they look like they're about 20 years behind and they don't load fast. And like the New Hampshire Supreme Court, it took them so long to have a decent page where you can actually see the court sessions, which are pretty important if you're the public and you can't be in Concord.
Yes, that's also a site that just had a redo, and it also looks great. It's just much easier, even if, you know, I don't have the youngest eyes in the world, and it's hard for me to see everything on this old page. And now it's just very, very clean. It's fun to even go tour on, even if you're not looking for a bill.
And I feel that's important as a general public service announcement, because, I mean, that's how information gets out nowadays, is via websites and social media. And if you don't have a website that the public can get to, you're not going to have an informed public. You're not going to have informed journalists that want to actually report on what's going on. So hopefully it expands quickly to some of the other departments.
I think I agree. I think it's also really crucial as we head into a session where there won't be remote testimony. It's not going to be as easy to hop on YouTube and participate in a hearing. So the way you can have your voice heard if you live in Coos County and cannot take a day off from work to testify, you know, write to your representative, your senator, and it's much, much easier to do that now.
All right, let's get a little doom and gloom now, I guess, but we'll go over the state's handling of COVID, which you've written about a fair bit the last couple weeks. It looks like they've got a public hearing next week for medical interventions.
Yes, this is I won't even be able to say the committee name probably correctly. It's the Committee to Investigate Medical Interventions and Vaccines, but you could sort of just erase that and say medical intervention of COVID interventions. Okay. So it's a bill that, and the committee's really trying to work hard on this. I think they're trying to look across all state laws and say, right now, what can state laws make you do in terms of medical intervention, and what is it not allowed to do? So there was very few things. I think there was either one or no cases in state law where it says the word medical interventions. But what is allowed, of course, is involuntary emergency admissions when someone needs to go to the state hospital because they're a danger to themselves, for example. Another example was if someone is stabbed at the prison, you do not need their permission to patch them up. That would be another example. Guardians can make medical decisions for the people in their care. So very, very few cases Where there is something about what can happen medically in that way. You know, the big one everyone will know are the vaccines that you need to enter school. And COVID is not one of those, despite what you may have heard. It is not required to enter school. But there's more than 25 bills coming before the legislature this year that in some way address a COVID measure. And so I see this as really a preview of what's to come for that debate. The first two meetings this week, they heard from state agencies and just municipal groups and advocacy groups, but the legal pieces. Next week, I think it's Wednesday, they'll open that up to the public, rebuild. New Hampshire, which has really been the lead organizer on opposing mandates, has already put out a request to their members to share their stories, to come. They have emphasized they need to show decorum. You know, there's another group that has had a lot of headlines with protesters arrested. They do not want to be in that group. And so I think we're really going to hear about mainly their argument that required vaccines are going to decimate our already struggling workforce. So there is this group. It's on paper very broad, but I think in practice it'll be really focused on COVID, vaccines, masks, all of that.
Yeah, it's kind of the thing when it comes to the legal perspective with health regulation is they are cans of worms. Every time you kind of poke into one, there's so many other little pieces that end up getting involved where, like, for example, one of the concerns over from the federal level with Biden, if he manages to get OSHA to enforce COVID testing and vaccinations, is that what's that going to do to OSHA? Like, is the right-leaning U.S. Supreme Court might say OSHA is unconstitutional and shouldn't exist because of Chevron doctrine. Like, it's very complex really quickly.
It is. And of course, we've not done this before. And yeah. Our attorney general just recently announced that he was going to sign us on with a number of other states to fight the mandate on federal contractors. That time I talked with them, I said, how about the mandate on private employers, which we just heard about today? And he said, when that comes, we'll also fight that. It's interesting. The governor's position has been businesses can do what they want. If they want to mandate this, that's their right. They don't want the government saying you have to mandate that for folks, businesses that are 100, more than 100. I think what's left out of that conversation sometimes for those private employers, they can still offer a test out, you can test out option. That's not true for healthcare or federal contractors, but I just think this is going to continue to dominate our lives, but also our political discussions and legislation going forward.
I mean, the federal contractor bit ended up being huge. I mean, the entire University of New Hampshire, all three campuses, need to get vaccinated if you're faculty, staff, or a student worker. And that student worker could be on the other side of the country working remotely.
Exactly. That's so right. When I looked at the lawsuit that we have signed on, it was just amazing to see how far reaching that is because if you're a federal contractor or subcontractor on paper, you are covered, right, regardless of whether you never leave your house and you can work remotely. So that challenge is going to be really interesting, I think, to watch, as is the one on private employers.
Yeah, and now we're getting the Pfizer vaccine for 5 and up, essentially, for everyone, and the implications that could bring along will be definitely interesting and definitely be catching a lot of news here once it actually starts happening, because odds are it's going to be kicking off either today's Friday when this is airing today or early next week.
Right. I saw on Facebook a couple of folks post, I got the appointment. I mean, there's as much talk as there is about from folks who are opposed to the vaccine. There's a big silent majority who do support the vaccine. And I've started seeing some excitement about just getting the appointment, say nothing about the actual vaccine. So the state has cautioned parents to prepare for a delay because the executive council had, of course, rejected that $27 million for vaccine outreach. It really would have boosted, the healthcare workforce to get this up and going in time. So they have much less money. They are putting that into just the vaccine for 5 to 11, but it's not, it's 4.5 million. It's not 27 million. So it is going to be a slower process. So they've asked for patience on that.
Yeah, it's gonna take time. Plus, kids aren't quite as efficient to go through the immunization line, I'd imagine. So, Anne Marie has a kitty behind her who is not playing very nice and is enjoying her lovely books in not appropriate ways, knocking everything over.
Oh God, how much did I wreck? I thought they were locked out.
I would like to welcome everyone to the work at home life of reporters and radio personalities. As I have my pet bird next to me as I'm recording on my side.
Sorry about that.
You're fine. It's entertaining for me. My stuff didn't break.
It busted out of their chamber.
So what else is kind of hitting the headlines when it comes to COVID and the state government?
Well, I did a story this week. It took me some time to get the numbers, a couple of weeks, but I finally got them. I wanted to know how the mobile vaccine van was doing. We are added another one this week. So now there are four. Some do, you know, they deliver vaccines to people's homes who cannot leave their home, but there is a big effort to have the van travel around the state and reach people, you know, at a community event or a fair or where have you. And I didn't see the numbers I kind of expected. So in 3 months, the vans have given out 1,176 shots at about 150 stops. So I really thought those numbers were going to be higher. I think a third of those, fewer than five people came. One place in particular was very successful. It was the First Parish Church in Dover. And I asked, you know, how did you manage to get, you know, 40 plus people so far? And her first question was, is that really a big number? That's sympathetic to us. They were frustrated, didn't have more, but they're keeping at it. They led a massive community-wide promotion campaign. They put flyers in stores. They put it in the newspaper. It went out to the town newsletter, to the church newsletter. It was on their big sign in front of their church. And so it was just it wasn't a church membership only drive. And so they pulled in a lot of people and they've had it come back each month. And I think that's not what we've seen from DHHS, for example, because they did a state park tour this year, or in the summer, took the vans out to not each state park, but a number of them. And I really thought that was going to be, you know, a real boost to the numbers. But there was not much promotion of that. It was hard sometimes for me to find the schedule, and I was looking hard for it. And I think out of 13 or 14 out of their 17 stops, they had fewer than five people, and some at zero. So it's not about whether those stops were successful. The question I think is that a missed opportunity? You know, time is ticking. The numbers are going up. We really should, I think, find a way to be as most impactful as we can. And I haven't seen evidence that we're doing that sort of look back and say, did this work? Do we need to pivot? And I did a right to know request. I got dozens of pages to kind of answer that question. And there was nothing in there that indicated there's ever been a let's stop, take a pause. How is it going? Do we need to do a new approach? And again, it's not about the wasted money, which was one question I think for people, but is it a missed opportunity given where we're at right now?
And the Department of Health and Human Services in New Hampshire is just, it's like hidden, like their website. We talked about websites earlier. Their website isn't very good. They don't do fantastic outreach into communities. And it's all the data that we have, like we've talked about previously, all the data isn't specific enough to really draw any conclusions that are useful. Like I read the numbers every morning. I hear about all these deaths, all these how horrible the rate of transmission is right now. And the hospitalizations aren't very high, but we're constantly being told the sky is falling. Like, is it because people are vaccinated that they're not ending up in the hospital? Is it because they've been effective at slowing it down as much as they possibly can and Delta isn't as bad as they thought it was? It's very confusing and you can't dive into it without getting information from that department.
It is. It's very confusing. And I will say, I think DHHS is very hard at work fighting the pandemic. That's their job. I think they haven't had a great, as much luck with their communication piece. And they haven't added to the communications team. So they already had a busy job. Mm. So now it's busier. But what they did do is spend $1.4 million on a marketing campaign run by a Manchester marketing firm that, you know, launched with starring a Patriots football player, you know, saying, get vaccinated, come to the Patriots game. Yeah. I mean, that's not just not persuasive.
We're in New Hampshire. We're not in Boston.
Not to a wide audience, you know. And so I think that was, it's too bad because I think you have a marketing firm that seems really good at what they do. And again, it's just too much at stake here to not get it right or not to think about, did we get it right? And so I think DHHS, I no doubt they're trying as hard as they can. That dashboard is definitely has some problems. You know, one thing that my colleague wrote about this week was the lack of equity data. I think there's 30% of cases they have race data for. So how can they, you know, commit to improving equity when it's just impossible to track it? Again, I don't think it's lack of trying. I think it's sort of lack of resources and then pause and review what we've done.
And New Hampshire Public Radio had a great piece out this past week that was on the it was partially on the equity factor of it, but it was also on the fact that we don't have proper vaccination rates that are consistent when you go at the federal level versus the state level, and how often it's updated and who is necessarily giving their information, so you know what's the most up-to-date piece of information. If you don't have proper vaccination numbers, how are you able to correlate anything with how things are getting better or worse? Because if you're finding, like, we have this huge vaccination rate, but COVID isn't slowing down, that gives you a big problem for figuring out whether everything is effective.
It's so true. And that dashboard, it includes boosters in there. Some boosters, not all boosters, because the federal government does not require some pharmacies, for example, to report those specifically or separate them out. So we don't know, like, boosters are definitely a key to keeping us safe, but some advocates will say we really need to focus on first and second doses here initially, or at least know how we're doing with that. So that is a problem. The CDC website has very different data. It's hard to know where we're really at. There's the school data, as NHPR did a great story on this, just showing, like, many of those cases are not showing up on the dashboard, again, because of the reporting process and requirements. You know, DHHS can't call every school every day and say, what do you have? And who knows how they are all reporting it. So it's interesting. It's helpful to some degree, but it's not exact in many ways, when we really need, right, as you said, need to know where we're doing well, where we're not, and where we need to focus.
And they already can't figure out how to get the boosters rolled into it. Now we're going to be introducing vaccines for ages 5 to 11. I mean, are they now going to be looking at the stats, including that population that wasn't even counted before? And that's going to, when it comes to percentages, that's going to be either need to be broken out or really be taken into consideration.
I agree that right now the dashboard has the youngest group, I think 11 to 19, which in of itself is a hard group to, if you want to think about how schools are, adding 18, 19 can be difficult, not separating that out. So, well, we have 5 to 11, well, we have some other age group. And it's very hard from just that website to figure out how we're doing percentage wise for that age group. And then even more so, are the numbers low up in the North Country versus the rest to the state? Is that where we need to put our effort? So that sort of very street level data is not available to us looking at the website. And I'm not sure who is looking at that and then responding to it.
Senior reporter Anne-Marie Timmons of New Hampshire Bulletin, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Sorry about the cat fiasco.
It is fine. Get more from her at NewHampshireBulletin.com. You're listening to WKXL in the morning on 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, and now 101.9 FM in Manchester. And be sure to check out NHTalkRadio.com to get all these interviews on demand. You're listening to WKXL in the morning.